Hello and welcome to the FWI podcast. I'm web manager Michael Target, and we've got another exclusive for you this time. We were privileged enough to be invited up to RAF Wittering on the A1, where JCB were testing their Diesel Max vehicle, their attempt to break the diesel land speed record. And we went up there and we saw it run a couple of times, very impressive. And a bit of an interview with Andy Green, who's a wing commander in the RAF, a test pilot, and every inch a test pilot as well. He's of fame from driving the vehicle Thrust SSC in 1994 to break the land speed record. I think that went over 750 miles per hour or something in out in Nevada. So he's a very, very enigmatic chap. So coming up is a bit of an intro from me, and then you can hear the vehicle going past on one of its test runs. It reaches speeds about 200 miles an hour on that one before running out of track. But out in Utah in 3 weeks' time, they intend to break 300 miles an hour. And then there's about 10 minutes of Andy Green talking about that day's run, and he's talking to the press about, you know, what he can see from the cameras. We're looking at a camera sort of relay, and he's talking about that. So I hope you enjoy it. Anyway. Hello and welcome to Farmers Weekly up at RAF Wittering. I'm web manager Michael Target. Now, I've come up here today for JCB's attempt at breaking their trial effort at breaking the diesel land speed record. Now, they're just testing the vehicle today with a view to it going out to Utah in 3 weeks' time on the salt plains to try and reach over speeds of over 300 miles per hour. You can see the press are all here, the world's press are all interested, but you can see the vehicle here is just coming back from its first run. It's doing three runs today, and hopefully reaching speeds of up to 200 miles an hour. Okay, coming up next is the Diesel Max doing one of its test runs. You hear it whoosh past, and then the noises afterwards are actually the support vehicles struggling to keep up with it. And then after that, we'll go straight into Andy Green talking about the day's run.
This is the car dropping into second gear for reasons that we've learned something else about the gearbox today. So I'm just about to drop it into first. And then I've got graphical representation of all of this. You're looking at a camera which is sitting just here, just over my right shoulder. So that's the edge of my head. My shoulder is just down here. That's obviously the steering wheel. My right hand sits there. And these are the coolant pump switches that you'll actually see me working in just a minute. So if you just wind it forward to the graphics and just stop there. I'm actually using, up to about 20 miles an hour, I'm still on the data page just to check a couple of things and start pushing. 27 miles an hour, and that will give you a good digital indication of how fast we're going. The two thermometers here are the engine RPMs. That's the rear one, that's the front one, 2,000 RPM and about 1,700. The engines, we start the rear first and the front. The rear is always slightly warmer, so they're always slightly mismatched. As soon as they come on load, they match up. Just one of the weird characteristics of this car. The engine guys tell me that it's meant to do that. They might be lying to me, I don't know. You can just see the very tip of the blue bar there, which is the boost pressure. It's absolute pressure, and it's in atmospheres. So that's reading one atmosphere, that's just normal pressure. When the turbos spin up, you'll see those blue bars come all the way up to about 4.5 here, which is 4.5 times atmospheric pressure. To give you some idea, in the Formula One days, the cars run up to 5.2 bar. By the time we get to Bonneville, that bar is going to go up to about 6 or 6.2. So we're going to be pushing not only more power than a Formula One car, but actually more boost than they used to as well. There's a strip across here which is a strip indication of speed, just so I can get a very gross glance if I can't be bothered to read the numbers. There's a green red indicator here which gives me G, which is particularly useful under braking to let me know how quickly I'm slowing down, because that relates to braking distance, how hard the parachutes are working, and that's actually quite useful for me to understand the performance of the car. And the two on the right hand side we're developing, which is to try and measure tyre slip. I won't go into the details of why that's a complicated business to do, but in a four-wheel drive car, all the tyres are slipping a little bit because you're trying to drive through all of them, and it's a very difficult thing to do. We may or may not need this at Bonneville to get right on the traction limit, but just in case we do, now is the time to start developing the model. So that's what we're doing. So again, what you're about to see, from 27 miles an hour, I'm going to call, when that gets to about 37, 38, I'll call stop push. Colin will stand on the brakes and stop the tractor behind me. Which it would have been Ken, but we had to let Colin drive. He'd have been so upset if you'd take one of his drives. As soon as he's clear, and I'll actually feel him detach. I can actually feel the stop push. I'll then drop it to first gear, pull first gear, let the clutch up. The gearbox will probably on this one. This is the last one, isn't it? Because we had a gearbox glitch, it actually goes into second gear. So I drive it a little bit just to check it's in second gear and to check the engines are driving, then drop it down into first. You'll see the RPMs jump up at about 45, 50 miles an hour, and then the car will pull away. As the boost comes up, I'll then put the the cooling circuits on. The reason I wait then, the coolant is so effective, if we cool the air down with the engine not on boost, the engine actually won't accelerate because we're feeding it freezing air. So we actually have to get the turbos to heat the air up before I flip the coolers on to cool it back down again. Now we could make that whole process automatic, but if it then stops working for any reason, it's going to be very difficult to debug. So I'm actually just doing it and it's not a problem, as long as I don't mind driving one-handed at 100 miles an hour. Why wouldn't you? As soon as I've done that, hand back on the steering wheel, we're coming up through 100 miles an hour, and I'm looking for an engine change at about 3400 RPM, just below the rev limit of 35, which sits just at the top of those two green bars. That's going to be about 115 miles an hour. Drop into second gear, it'll go right to the bottom of the boost. Again, we'll get the blue lights will drop down and go back up again onto boost. 3400 RPM again will give me about 160 miles an hour in second gear. Engine change up to third. At that stage, I'll be about 4,000 foot to go marker. And for those of you, I take it most of you were down at that end of the track, were you? So I'm about 1,000 feet from you guys. I didn't wave on this run, so don't be disappointed that I didn't say hello. I then push just past the 3,000 foot to go marker to get 195 miles an hour. Straight off the gas, straight on the brake, just in case I don't get the parachute. Pop the parachute, and I call it as well, so we've got a timing reference both for video and also for anybody that's watching, so they can actually measure how long it takes to deploy. And as soon as I've got the chute, I get the jump up to about minus 1G, and I can ease off the brakes just to spare the brakes. And the idea is then to keep the parachute flying until we stop. The salt bat doesn't matter, but here the runway is so coarse it actually tears up the parachute, so we're just trying to save the parachute life. I'll let you see it. Please, Jonathan. No audio on this one. Okay. So that's the stop push. That's me dropping it into gear, the RPMs have gone down. Very slow acceleration in second gear, I'm just proving the gearbox. Now back into first gear and start to accelerate a bit quicker. Just about to come onto boost. There's the boost, there are the coolant pumps going on. 100 miles an hour, just about to change gear. There. second gear, boost coming back up again. Top end of second gear, about 160. Change to third. Still pulling through 180. And then I'm at a distance of 195. On the brakes, parachutes out, minus 1G, now relaxing to about minus a half, and just easing the brakes so the parachute do most of the work. Back to walking pace, 20 miles an hour, and then just turning to help the guys actually turn the car around. And we've got yesterday's tail camera for 200 miles an hour. I'll just let you look back now from the tail and actually see the reverse run. And the parachute deployed.
Andy, what was the maximum G you were getting on that run there?
It was about because we're only running 1,000 horsepower engines, it was only about 0.4 of a G acceleration and about minus 1 deceleration with the parachute and the brakes.
What do you expect for 300 miles an hour?
About minus 1.5 on the parachutes. But I won't need to brake at that stage because I've got 5 miles in front of me. The parachutes don't come out all the time in the world to deal with it. It's slowing down is the biggest deal about runway testing because there's so little distance to get it wrong. Even putting my foot onto the brake and catching the throttle pedal as well will lengthen the braking distance by 1,000 feet. I know because I tried it earlier this week. Okay, this is a camera actually mounted the base of the tail just on the... As you stand with the car behind you, looking the way you come, it's just off to the right-hand side. So the exhaust is to the left-hand side of the picture, and the parachute basically sits just above the camera. And we should have audio on this. And this is the 200 mile an hour run from yesterday. Currently, you're looking at the fast track. Sequencing of the chute and how it deploys that we actually got a good chute deployment. What you don't want is the chute to come out fully open and then the rope to go tight because you get this huge shock load. What you actually want, can you just go back to the motor chute deployment? You actually want the chute to come out partially reefed, and we've actually tied the chute half closed, and then it goes out to the full line stretch. And then once the line pulls tight, it then bursts the reefing tie and comes fully open. And I can actually feel that two-stage process. That's one of the things we've developed here on the runway. And we'll be looking for exactly the same thing just there as the chute bursts open. That's exactly perfect chute deployment. That isn't fitting with the chute. And actually most people, most of the guys who are running at Bonneville just dump it out the back and accept whatever shock load they get to be kind to the car, and more importantly, to make sure we don't burst the chute, we're actually reaching it down and then letting it deploy. It's exactly the same as sports parachutists do, exactly the same thing as any other military parachute. So we're just trying to control the deployment. And that's one of the things we're testing here, even at these speeds. Brilliant, thank you, Jonathan. Questions? All stuck.
So what's your like to drive?
Fantastic. It's a really, really good car to drive. I've been so, so pleased. Very stiff, very stable chassis, very well put together suspension, well damped, just compliant enough, easy to steer, big trail angle on the steering, so it's quite heavy, but very quick to self-centre, and it's deliberately quite heavy, so that to make it as stable as possible. It's a delight, it really is. Brakes are smooth and progressive. To do those sorts of runs, to do a 200 mile an hour run and slow down in that distance with confidence, without any risk of damaging the car, I need a lot of confidence in the chassis, and that's what I've got. So it's a real driver's car. The guys have done a fabulous job. But I don't know, I've never seen this car run, so you tell me, what does it look like?
Very nice, very stable, very sleek.
Is it as noisy outside as it is inside?
Yeah,
Because all band speed record cars, the thing they don't put in is any sort of, you know, air conditioning or soundproofing or anything. All land speed cars are designed to capture all the noise inside. Always works. It's weight.
Okay, are there any other questions? Can this car do it? Can the
SCG,
can you get this record?
Can this car do it? Yes. That's not quite the question you asked, though. What we need to do in the next 10 days is to get this car out to the States. Get it to the start line at Bonneville, and then we've got a week of Bonneville Speed Week and then a week of the Salt to ourselves to learn how to operate it when it's plus 42 in the shade, except there isn't any shade. A salt-laden environment, which is the worst possible thing for any kind of mechanical vehicle. In 4,000 miles from home, where we're actually operating out of the local hotel and the local hangar at the local airfield, and we have to ship the car there every night because they close the salt. It's a national park, effectively, and they close it off at night, which is exactly the right thing to do. We have to do all of that in about the next two or three weeks and learn to do it all well enough to operate the most powerful and the most complex diesel car in history up to 300 miles an hour. Now, are these guys up to it? Yes, they are. We just need to put it all together as a package and be lucky with the weather, and everything will be great. But that's the excitement of land speed record breaking. It isn't a given. Being you know, on the grid at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon with Carlos, an identical size and shape to everybody else's, plus or minus a tenth of a second per lap, isn't a given. You know, you're not a hero because you're plus or minus a tenth of a second faster or slower. You're a hero because you make the car run at the speed that no one's ever been to before. That's what these guys are capable of. That's the excitement.
Are you going to stop at 300 miles an hour?
300 is the target. If we can get more, of course we'll get more. But, you know, we will also reach either a length of track limit, or an engine limit, or a tyre speed limit, all of which we'll be testing as we get there. No one's ever built one of these before, so we write the rule book run by run and work out how much safety margin we've got for the next run. Currently, that's very big. As we get faster, we'll learn about build-up of temperature in the tyres, we'll learn about build-up of temperature in the engines, the turbos. You've seen the packaging of that car. There's a lot of powerful machinery in a very small space in there. We need to learn how to make that all run. Somewhere we'll reach a natural limit. When we reach that, but, you know, hopefully we'll reach it before the end of speed, before the end of Bonneville, and we'll have reached the car's limit. That's the target. What's that limit going to be? Over 300. But I'd be very surprised if it isn't.
Okay, and in that one, I'm going to take you away, so I know you've got to need
Well, there you go. Very interesting. Look forward to seeing if the JCB team and Andy Green manage to break the 300-mile-an-hour barrier out in Utah in 3 weeks' time, and we'll let you know how they get on. Hope you've enjoyed it, and stay tuned for the next episode, which features Have a Go at the Game Fair, plus a bit of harvest coverage, it being that time of year again. Cheers.